Rangers of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Those who are here illegally, they have a responsibility as well.
You know, sometimes people don't say the right thing.
It is inappropriate, but it is the residents.
Began to bang on the flight deck.
Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s?
He needs his mama.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. All right, this is a radio show that goes places other talk shows wish they could. If you don't believe me, just ask them. And we're here every night until 1 a.m., like I say, West Coast, 4 a.m. East Coast, doing all of that stuff and more. Our website, philhendryshow.com, and, you know, radio for patriots by patriots, and kicking a little bit of ass, taking a few names, and hopefully giving people just enough of a reason to keep on living through another night. Let's keep on marching, baby, right over top of all them soft heads, all of those stupid people. All right, coming up this hour, we have our News and Information Hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Don't forget, you can get your official Phil Hendry Show T-shirt. And what is all this horse dung I'm hearing here?
People want to have a logo on the front.
Well, they ain't getting a logo on the front. We got a T-shirt that has the Phil Hendry logo on the back. Okay? So, you know, when they know what you're all about, they're in your exhaust. How about that? So pick up your best of, your Phil Hendry, official Phil Hendry Show T-shirt at philhendryshow.com. Just hit on shop, and there it is. What the hell have we got in the news tonight, man? Some bizarre things. Lacrosse players suspended under zero tolerance policies. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of news. I guess if you guys want, the big story here, Schwarzenegger and Shriver split after 25 years. But one would have thought that the biggest story of all, and it would have lasted a lot longer than just maybe a week and a half, it's beginning to fade from the front pages, the killing of Osama bin Laden. It's just like, I guess we just, like what?
I don't know. I was thinking about that, you know, it didn't like matter anymore, but when they finally did kill him, it felt good. But if they had not caught him, you know.
Yeah, if they didn't catch him, it still would have been, I mean, we're going to get him and go to work.
That's a fair assessment, I think. You know, I wouldn't thinking about that guy. Days, weeks could go without me thinking about that guy. Then all of a sudden, one night, bang, there it is, Osama bin Laden dead. And we let it out of our system for a few days, and now we're back to square one. And for some people, I mean, it wasn't even a few days. It was like one. And then, you know, this being America, of course, one week later, we got to deal with O'Donnell and the rest of those schlubs, those silly little people with their problems having to do with, you know, we didn't Mirandize his ass, and we didn't, I don't know, give him his phone call.
Wonder who he'd call.
Yeah, he'd probably call, like, Al-Qaeda or something.
What do you mean, Al-Qaeda? You think they're in the book?
Well, he'd probably call up, like, a number he got.
He had a number that was sewn into his pants.
What do you mean, sewn into his pants?
Yeah, they had a number on it that was sewn into his pants, right?
Well, it was sewn into some kind of a jacket. I don't know if it's sewn into his pants, but he had a phone number, and he had 500 euros. How far are you going to get on 500 euros?
What is that?
500 European dollars. They got a little bit higher value than American dollars. I think it takes us $1.24 to buy 1 euro.
What's that mean?
If you want to get a euro dollar, it's worth more than an American dollar.
Well, what do you mean it costs $1.24?
If you want to buy a euro, let's say you're going to Europe and you need to use euros, okay?
Uh-uh.
What is with him?
You got to have the right kind of money when you go to another country, right?
Yeah, what about a pound and everything like that? I heard about a pound.
It ain't a pound, man. It's a euro. When you're in England, you can use a pound. I don't know. Do they use euros in England? What do they do?
I don't know. I think they still got a pound.
And I guess they got francs, but you use euro dollars when you're traveling around Europe, okay? Pound. I don't know, man. All right. You understand what I'm saying, bud?
Yeah.
So, you want to go and get some, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, how do you think you go and get euros?
You go and you get them at the bank.
Right. Well, you don't just walk in and say, okay, give me 500 euros, right?
No, you got to give them American money, and then they do an exchange. Oh, now, okay, now I see what you mean.
Yeah. Are you kidding me, man?
Oh, no, it's okay. Yeah, so you have to pay to get your euros. If you give $400 to some cat in a bank to get euros, you're probably going to get, I don't know what the hell you're going to get. You get $400, you're going to get maybe 300 bucks back, 300 euros back.
That's a jip.
Well, you can call it a jip if you want, or you can say that's the rate of exchange. That's the rate of exchange. It's more valuable to get a euro, which means it's more difficult for us to travel, which means we can't spend money overseas as much as we spend it here, which means the people in Europe and in Asia and elsewhere are not going to get, American dollars like they, you know, like to have. They want to have America. They want to, like, you know, lots and lots and lots of American dollars. And, I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we're going to get a lot of American dollars for fewer euros, but it's another thing to say, how are we going to entice the Americans to buy our euros when they're so expensive? Americans don't want to buy those. Americans are going to spend their money on other things. So it's, you know, one way or the other.
I don't understand any of that stuff, man.
How did we even get on this subject? We're talking about euros. Well, we were talking about Bin Laden. He had 500 euros in his coat.
Yeah, he'd get 500 euros. I guess I don't know where he's going to take them to. Did he get a bus or something?
I don't know why he had 500 euros, man. I think it was like real desperation money. It's like, you know, it's the most valuable thing over there in the Middle East. You notice it wasn't American money. It was Euro money. And it was obviously enough money to get him from point A to point B, where he could get on a phone or something and get all of his billions and billions and millions of dollars. All right. The other story here, former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and his activist wife, Maria Shriver, have announced their separation after 25 years of marriage. The couple's been living separately for at least a few weeks, they said in a statement on Monday. Well, what a drag. Insiders say Shriver actually moved out of the L.A. home that they shared together some months ago. Wow. This has been a time of great personal and professional transition for each of us, the statement read. After a great deal of thought, reflection, discussion, and prayer, we came to this decision together. At this time, we are living apart while we work on the future of our relationship. Well, look at these people. They're butchering up marriage, man. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you're talking about gay people.
I didn't say anything about gay people. Anyway, at this time, we are living apart while we work on the future of our relationship. We consider this a private... Well, you know, a lot of people do that, even when they're married, you know. They could still very much... have their marriage back together. Because you're separated doesn't mean that, you know, your marriage is over.
Yeah, but the headline there said that Shriver were miserable in a marriage for a long time. And I wonder if that's going to kind of Arnold's just, you know, he's had all kind of women and everything.
Yeah, he's a movie star.
I don't know. I'm not going to make those assumptions. Schwarzenegger, who today announced his acting comeback in film drama Cry Macho, had ignored his wife for years, and she felt underappreciated after spending very little time together in recent years, according to TMZ. TMZ, as you know, is an entertainment website that lies all the time. Now then.
What?
No, I'm kidding. It doesn't say that. Statement did not reveal when the separation began, but sources claim it was a long time coming. Long time coming, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Claimed she was miserable in a marriage for several years.
Yeah.
And had complained about her actor husband ego. Well, baby, you marry an actor, what do you think you're going to get?
Yeah, these women, man, they want to marry an actor, and they have a big stud actor. Now they find out what it's all about.
Well, it's true. Of course, she's Maria Shriver.
Who's she?
She's a member of the Kennedy family, so she's heavyweight as it is, baby. Don't worry about that. Now, Schwarzenegger... apparently, Shriver's understood to have been concerned about whether or not to divorce because of her religious beliefs. One source said she's been a lost soul for a long time. Poor girl. Although this story seems to be written from the perspective of Maria Shriver. Well, you know, let's face it.
Did you say you met Schwarzenegger?
I met him over at Clear Channel, and I met him one fine day. He had been doing an interview, and he came down the hall, and he was just doing the glad-handing. You know, hey, how you doing? How you doing? How you doing? It was just before he became governor. And I remember because I was struck by how short he was. He's shorter than me. I'm 6 feet tall, so I'm 6 foot, so he's got to be 5'10", I would say.
Yeah, 5'10", not that small.
Well, no, maybe 5'9". Oh, you know, I'll have to look it up. But 6 foot is not all that tall anymore either. You know, 6 foot is like almost average height. And Schwarzenegger looked a lot shorter than me, although the guy was about 15 times wider than me. Wide, not depth, you know?
Yeah, your stomach could probably still beat out his, right?
Yeah, that's right, bud. That's right. My stomach could beat out his. Anyway, Shriver has been, she's not been wearing her wedding ring since mid-March, and on April 15th, Schwarzenegger was photographed without his wedding band while on a bike ride in L.A. Wow. Shriver also posted a video on YouTube in March in which she was naked, and I'm kidding. Oh, get out of here.
Are you serious?
I'm kidding. Shriver posted a video on YouTube in March asking her fans for advice on how to transition into the next phase of her life. As you know, transitions are not easy. I'd love to get your advice on how you've handled transitions in your own life, she said in a video posted on YouTube. It's so stressful, so stressful to not know what you're doing next. People ask, what are you doing? And then they can't believe that you don't know what you're doing. The couple have four children together, aged 14 to 21, and today their son, Patrick, 17, thanked his Twitter followers for their kind words. He wrote, I appreciate all your messages. Small speed bump in life. Luckily, we own Hummers. We will cruise right over it. All will be okay. Peace. Wow, these kids, man. That's the toughest part, you know. The couple met in 1997 when journalist Tom Brokaw introduced Shriver to the Austrian bodybuilder at a charity tennis tournament. The two married in April of 1986. They've got four children. Shriver helped bolster Schwarzenegger's campaign 8 years ago to become California governor. She stood by the Terminator actor at the time amid claims that he groped a string of women during his movie career. See, that didn't hurt him at all, did it?
No, it didn't, man.
He had all kinds of women coming out of the woodwork saying he groped them and grabbed them and gripped them and...
Probed them.
And it didn't hurt him because I think people here in California realize, well, the guy's a movie actor. Of course he was groping. He was groping and he was moping, man. Anyway, the Los Angeles Times broke the story late yesterday saying that Shriver is moving out of their Brentwood mansion while the two determine the next step in their 25-year marriage. Before Schwarzenegger became governor of California in 2003, Shriver was a superstar presenter. Presenter? How did that become an English word? Anyway, presenter on KTLA. So that's the story.
What's that?
Presenter is a word they use generally in England or in British television. All right. Coming back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show, we got other news for you. The Navy will allow same-sex marriages on bases, and lacrosse players are suspended under zero-tolerance policies. 877-876-7445, the Phil Hendry show. And also, a judge calls a defendant gayer than a sweet-smelling jockstrap. Boy, we got gay news tonight, don't we, on the Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
U.S. Airways lands its lowest satisfaction rating in flyer survey. Southwest at the top. A new Consumer Reports survey reveals that air travelers want comfort without emptying their wallets. No kidding.
That makes sense.
And many airlines don't deliver. No kidding.
That seems to be a lot easier if they just take everybody's opinion.
They ain't going to take nobody's opinion, man, unless it makes them some money. That's the way all businesses run. Look, let me tell you something. One of the most suspect sources of consumer feedback many times is a customer survey. You don't know what the hell people are thinking or talking about. People will say all kinds of stuff when they're taking a survey. People will say all kinds of stuff when someone is polling information. People will say, we want this, we want that, we want this. One of the worst things you can do is to ask people what they like or what they don't like, because people don't know what they like until they hear it, see it, or experiencing it. Now, that happens to be a bona fide fact in the history of consumer relations in this country.
Well, say that again, man.
Yeah.
People don't know what they like until they actually experience it.
Well, if a guy asked me, you want to have a chocolate, like chocolate ice cream or vanilla, I'd say chocolate, and that guy would be happy.
Okay, that's very good, bud. But don't you also like coffee ice cream?
Yeah.
All right. Suppose you didn't know there was such a thing as coffee ice cream. And a guy says, would you like chocolate or would you like vanilla? And you go, I'd like chocolate. Then along comes another guy and he says, I've got coffee-flavored ice cream. What would you say?
I'd say that there's no such thing.
What are you talking about, man? The guy came by with it.
The guy came by with it. The guy invented it.
The guy invented the coffee ice cream?
Yes, the guy invented coffee...
A guy asked you, do you like chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? What do you say?
I'd say I like chocolate.
And then another guy comes with coffee ice cream. What do you say?
I'd say, he says he's got coffee ice cream. The other guy already asked me.
Oh, come on, man. You know what we're talking about. The other guy already asked me.
Well, why did that guy have coffee?
Because he didn't invent it. He didn't know. He's a company, and he has chocolate and vanilla ice cream. That's all he's got. Okay?
Yeah.
So he's always coming around, and he's always asking the same stupid question. Do you like chocolate, or do you like vanilla? Do you like chocolate, or do you like vanilla? And all of his customers say, almost to the tune of 80 or 90%, we love chocolate. So what does he do? He keeps making chocolate ice cream. He keeps making chocolate ice cream. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that's what people like.
Great. Now comes a guy with coffee-flavored ice cream. Okay? And Bud Dickman has never had coffee-flavored ice cream, but you like coffee, don't you?
No, I don't like it at all.
What do you mean you don't like coffee?
You don't like coffee.
I don't drink it.
Well, then why do you like coffee-flavored ice cream?
Because I like the flavor of it.
All right, well, a guy comes along and he has coffee-flavored ice cream. What do you say to him?
I don't like it.
Why?
Because I don't like coffee. What are you talking about, man?
Bud, I'm going to belt you, man, in about 5 seconds.
What are you talking? I wouldn't have no coffee ice cream because I don't like the taste of it.
Then why do you like coffee ice cream? How did you find out about coffee ice cream?
They ran out of chocolate.
They ran out of chocolate?
Yeah. That the time you went over there, you went with me to Ben and Jerry, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, they ran out of chocolate, so you tried the coffee and you liked it.
Yeah.
You know something, Bud? All right, I can tell you the way it usually works is the following thing. Guy's having chocolate and vanilla and chocolate and vanilla and chocolate and vanilla until the cows come home, and along comes a guy with a different flavor. And people go, wow, you know, I've been eating chocolate and vanilla and chocolate and vanilla. Let me try this. And suddenly, whoa, they like it. Okay?
Yeah, but nobody asked their opinion, though.
Exactly. Nobody asked their opinion. No one said to them, well, if you didn't like chocolate or vanilla, what other flavor would you like? Because people don't know. If all they know is chocolate and vanilla, what the hell are they going to say? Well, I don't know. So the shrewd businessman, the shrewd creative, is someone who goes according to their own instinct. They say, well, this is something. Let me try this. Let me try that. You're always trying things. You're always trying things in the marketplace to see what people like. So the guy that came along with coffee-flavored ice cream.
What about Moose Tracks?
Yeah, I like that.
All right. Well, the guy that came along with Moose Tracks. All the good stuff that you like, the guy that came up with that, this is a guy to follow because he's not just some dude that's responding to polls, man. This guy is telling you what's up. You know, he's saying, here, what do you think? Oh, I like it. That's what I mean about people not knowing what they like until they taste it. I never tried coffee.
Well.
Anyway, this new Consumer Reports survey reveals that air travelers want comfort without emptying their wallets. Many airlines don't deliver. U.S. Airways landed at the bottom of the list for overall satisfaction. They also received the lowest marks for cabin crew service. The airline also ranked lowest in 2007. 2007? When the last Consumer Report airline rankings were released. Oh, and so the new ones here in 2011, 4 years later, and they're still at the bottom. A U.S. Airways spokesman questioned the methodology of the Consumer Reports survey and pointed out a 70% improvement in baggage delivery since 2007. 70 ain't good enough, man. How about 100? The airline scored a 61 out of 100 in overall satisfaction on the Consumer Reports scale. Scores above 60 mean those surveyed were fairly well satisfied, according to the ratings guide. Southwest Airlines, though, topped the rankings for overall satisfaction, which includes getting top ratings for ease of check-in for flights, in-flight service, cabin cleanliness, and baggage handling, with JetBlue Airways coming in second in the survey of nearly 15,000 passengers. How about that? JetBlue and Southwest. JetBlue and Southwest also scored highest in seat comfort.
That sounds pretty good.
I don't like to fly them, man, because you got to, like, it's like a bus or something.
Why? Just because they give you that card?
Yeah, you want to be treated like you're the king or something.
No, I don't. I just don't like holding on to that plastic thing.
Whatever, man. I mean, look at flying now. That's the way it is. You know, you check it in yourself. You get your own seat assignment. Southwest just makes it quicker than most. And Southwest is like a commuter thing, man. You know, it's going between cities where a lot of business people are commuting. The passengers shared their experiences from a collective 29,720 domestic flights from January of 2010 to January of 2011, and these survey results were compiled before cracks were discovered in some of Southwest Airlines' planes.
Yeah, what would they say then?
I don't know. Maybe they'd come in dead last. That's a drag, Southwest. You were doing okay, man, until the freaking roof started to peel off of one of your jets. All right, high schoolers get suspended and arrested for bringing weapons to school, but is this a case of zero tolerance run amok? We're going to find out coming up here on The Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry. Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on our website, philhendryshow.com. Lacrosse. What the hell am I saying here?
Lacrosse, man.
I know. I'm going lacrosse.
Yeah, probably got something wrong with your mouth.
What do I got wrong with my mouth? I just said lacrosse. I don't know why I said that, but lacrosse is what it's called, and that's how I'm going to pronounce it, and there ain't nothing wrong with my mouth. Thank you very much.
All right.
Lacrosse players suspended under zero-tolerance policies. What is it with lacrosse players, by the way?
I know, they're always, like, raping somebody and everything.
Yeah, I think it's something of sport, man. You got to be weird to play that in the first place. That's for Indians.
It's what?
It's for Indians.
What is?
Lacrosse, everybody knows it's an Indian game.
Well, what is that? What does that mean, that anybody else that plays it is nuts?
Well, look at all the people that play it, man. They're weird. All them Duke players, weren't they lacrosse?
Yeah, but those guys, first of all, man, that was trumped up. Those dudes got off.
Yeah, but you could have been the other way.
Oh, get out of here. Lacrosse players suspended under zero tolerance could have been the other way. Yeah, that's right, bud, and you could have been born with brains.
That ain't that funny.
Lacrosse players suspended under zero tolerance. Penknife deemed deadly weapon, lighter deemed explosive device. Okay. Now, this is in Maryland, eastern Maryland. Varsity athlete Graham Dennis never thought of a penknife he carried in his bag to repair his lacrosse stick strings as a dangerous weapon. It was a tool of the sport, he believed, until Easton High School officials found the item in a search of bags on a school bus headed for a game. Dennis and teammate Casey Edsel, who had a lighter that he also used to repair equipment, were sent to the principal's office and the police were called. The police were called. Dennis was hauled off in handcuffs to be fingerprinted and charged as a juvenile with possession of a deadly weapon. Edsel was charged for having an explosive on school property. The school system's handling of the punishment has enraged the 17-year-old boy's parents and drawn criticism from some area residents who say the case is an example of Talbot County's zero tolerance policies gone amok. Here is Graham Dennis explaining to WJLA-TV what he uses the lighter and the penknife for.
I tore a couple white strings on the side, and I had to replace them with black strings. I cut them, and then I burn them there. If I don't cut them and burn them, they fray like this. It makes me feel vulnerable, like I could go out, and this would happen to me any time for things that shouldn't be like this. College is definitely a big fear for me because I'm not sure if I'm going to have to write this on my record, and I'm not sure what kind of college is going to want a kid that I have to write possession of a deadly weapon on the resume.
No kidding, man. And let me tell you what the problem is. The problem is that we've had problems with violence on school grounds before. The parents don't know what the hell to do. The parents are lost, so they leave it up to the school. Well, the school's going, well, we don't want to get sued, and we want to make sure everything's cool. So the school just says zero tolerance. So the school says, you can't have this, you can't have that, you can't have this, and you can't have that. And if we find you with this, and we find you with that, and we find you with something else, you're going to get arrested. We realize it sounds like chicken crap, but it's zero tolerance. That's what they call it, zero tolerance. Now, you may call it zero tolerance run amok, and I agree with you, but I don't blame the school. The parents don't know what to do. The parents are standing there with a thumb up their rear end. They leave it up to the school. All this stuff is going. If the parents didn't like this stuff in the first place, if they thought that they were going too far with zero tolerance in the first place, they might have said something about it. Well, you're the school. You know what's going on. Hey, I don't know.
Yeah, but how are they supposed to know?
You're right. How are they supposed to know? So what do? They leave it up to the school. What does the school say? Tell you what, the best thing that we can do so there's no problem at all is there will be zero tolerance. No No exceptions. Now, one of the problems is that zero tolerance has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with what the problem is with school violence. It's the typical remedy that society engages in. It's never the right remedy. We found this out with gun control, found it out the hard way. We spent years and years and years and years trying to control guns. Can't have guns. Can't have this many in a clip. Can't have this kind of weapon. Can't have this kind of, this kind of, this kind of. And we still had unbelievable violence. The reason is because we've got violent people. Violent people. And when you're in a school, especially a high school, and a kid is coming from God knows what kind of home onto that school, onto that the school grounds, you don't know what kind of hell that kid's coming from. You don't have any idea. Some of these parents, I'll tell you what the parents, what the schools would do far better in concentrating on, relations with parents, figuring out exactly what kind of home this kid is living in, figuring out exactly what kind of discipline is going on, what this child is allowed to do, what this child isn't allowed to do. You call it a nanny state thing. Well, I want to ask you a question. If you don't like the nanny state, if you don't want people interfering in the home lives of other people, then how do you propose we correct the problem of violent kids? Because that's what the problem is, getting back to our gun control analysis and an analogy. If the problem is criminals, which I agree it is, go after the criminals. The same thing with school violence. The problem is with a violent kid. You have to go after the violent kid. And I'm not saying you throw the kid in jail.
Well, you're talking about like what?
You got to figure out why the kid's violent in the first place. With kids, it's a whole different approach. But this jazz, but I'll tell you something. There's nothing wrong with a school saying zero tolerance means zero tolerance. When they say you can't have this stuff, you can't have this stuff. Well, it's stupid. Well, it may be stupid. What the hell are they supposed to do? That's what they said they were going to do. The parents knew that's what they were going to do, and that's what they did. Now they're doing it, and everybody's got a problem with it. Well, wake up. You need some other policy? You bet you need another policy. I'll tell you the policy you need. Forget about zero tolerance. You need to figure out why some kids are violent and why other kids aren't. That's what you got to do. The school system's handling of the punishment has enraged the 7-year-old boy's parents. Well, okay, so you're enraged. You know, all you do is pick up a school handbook, pick up the, you see what's in the handbook. We're not going to allow this, we're not going to allow that. The better question is, what the hell's the kid doing with this if you're not supposed to have it? This idea of zero tolerance run amok, there's no such thing, people. There's no such thing. If you say you want a zero tolerance policy, well, brother, you better be ready to take it on. And if you don't like it, then you better be ready to do something else. In my opinion, my suggestion would be this. Concentrate on the children in the school, what's going on with them between the ears, and forget about this jazz, whether they brought a plastic knife, whether they brought a toy gun, whether they brought a lighter, whether they brought some string. And let's talk about who are the kids that are possibly prone to violence. And is it the kid that's writing the violent story? No. Is it the kid that wrote the story about the... No, not necessarily. I realize it's, you know, we're asking our teachers to do something that's going to take, you know, quite frankly, their knowledge of children, child behavior, teaching. But it's way better asking them to do that than asking them to police the freaking kids out of every little thing they've got, man, whether it's string or a lighter or something else. All right, that's all I got nothing more to say about that, man. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. That, of course, is the number when we're taking phone calls on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. This hour is our news and information hour. What do you guys think of that?
I think it makes sense.
All right. That's all you need to say, then. Other stories. FEMA asks for return of millions in disaster aid. Cedar Rapids, Iowa, after the raging Cedar River filled his home with 13 feet of water and ruined most of his possessions, Justin Van Fleet pled for help from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to get back on his feet. Dead broke and living in a FEMA trailer following the 2008 flood, Van Fleet repeatedly submitted paperwork and made countless phone calls arguing his case. After 7 months, the agency finally gave him more than $20,000, which he said he gave his life back, which he said gave him his life back, and allowed him to move into a house. Then in March, a letter arrived from the government with a shocking message. He should never have gotten that money. He had just 30 days to pay it all back. The agency is asking Van Fleet and thousands of other Americans who were victims of natural disasters to return more than $22 million in government aid, acknowledging it mistakenly made payments to many people who were ineligible. Now, by law, listen to this before we start to get all bugged about this one. By law, FEMA's required to recover improperly spent money, but most of the people who were helped say they used the cash years ago. And they don't want to be financially punished because of the agency's errors. And that's a very good point. So anyway, FEMA's running around and asking people for their money back. People that may or may not have qualified for the money. Have they figured their act out over there at FEMA? I don't think so. World famous Phil Henry Show. Several females couldn't pass a physical fitness test, and we'll figure out what that's about. PhilHenryShow.com.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Right. It's the Phil Henry Show.
I'm doing like heavy metal all 3 hours, and now I got this crap for bumper music.
I don't know.
Jesus, this radio show is the most schizophrenic thing I've ever worked in my life. We're doing metal for 3 hours, and I got that. What was that?
I don't know, man. I'm like Quincy Jones.
Anyway, so here we are back with our final quarter hour here on the show. It's been one of those nights, man. It's just been one of those nights. Here's a New York man who says, you know, we started the show out talking about Islam, and we had, you know, what are they going to do with the money? And General Galen Shaw said, well, you know, why don't we give it to the Muslim community? Because those guys have, they've taken a lot of heat, and people were generally disagreeing with that. I mean, they were saying the money should go to the people who were the victims of 9/11. Oh, let's give it to the Muslim community. Well, you know, there might be a little bit of a point there in what General Shaw was saying. Here's a guy who lives in Amherst, New York. He posts bomb-making next door, it says bomb-making next driveway. This is a sign on his front lawn to protest a new mosque that's going up. Now, it's a feud between two Transit Road neighbors in Amherst, New York. This is Amherst, New York. So, Transit Road may mean something to the people here. A homeowner and a mosque turned ugly this weekend when the homeowner staked a sign on his front lawn insinuating that the new 11,600-square-foot Islamic worship site is home to a bomb-making operation. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Man, that's not right.
I know, it's Michael Hike, who lives next door to the Jafara Islamic Center of Niagara Frontier, put a small sign that reads, bomb-making next driveway to northbound traffic on Transit Road. Hike said he put the sign in protest because he was frustrated with how the mosque and Amherst town officials have handled his concerns about the building, which opened in November. The guy says, the place is too close. I don't care what people think. It doesn't matter what people think. This is a way to get answers now. I get none from the town. The intent was to catch the eye of the people who I have a problem with. Mosque members and other area Muslims objected to the sign and called him on a hike to take it down. Here is Dr. Saeed Jafri of the Jafaria Islamic Center talking WIVB television about his angry neighbor.
I love my neighbor, and I pray for him that Almighty Creator guides him for love of humanity and be above those racist attitude.
Yeah, whatever. So anyway, town supervisor Dr. Barry Weinstein says the sign is protected by the First Amendment.
It is inappropriate, but it is the residents' free speech prerogative to put up a sign, and it's the same free speech that we all hold so dearly.
Yeah, that's fine, Dr. Weinstein, and maybe it is free speech. How about doing something about the guy's concerns? Now, if the guy's concerns are irrational or, you know, stupid, and they probably are, I don't know, because if this guy says he doesn't care about what people think and then he puts a sign like that up, I know he's trying to get attention. I get that. Well, he's got the attention, so how about taking the sign down? You got the attention, and I'm assuming, unless the town is filled with people as dumb as this Weinstein guy just sounded, I'm assuming they're going to try to do something about what this guy's problem is. Hike has long complained that bright lights from the mosque encroach upon his yard and violate town code. He's demanded that the mosque put up a six-foot-tall fence along his property line, but mosque officials have objected, saying it's too costly. What's the answer to the town code question? Sounds to me like maybe they came back and said to him, you know what, Mr. Hike, you're wrong, it doesn't violate the town code. And just like a lot of these self-appointed dictators, he's a dictator of one, he's decided, well, yes, it does violate the town code, he's going to be a pain in the ass about it. Is that it? Is that the story? Instead, they planted shrubs that will grow beyond 6 feet within a few years. They didn't want to put up the signs, so they put up shrubs. Mubarak Abidi, who is the mosque president, said he called Amherst police over the weekend about the sign, but was told there was nothing illegal about it. They said there's nothing in the law that we can do anything about this sign, he said. Hike said the sign was not directed at anyone in particular. No, not at all. It does not say what driveway. It doesn't say at the mosque. He sounds like an ass.
Yeah, he does.
He sounds like a real ass. And I'm sure that he's got problems with lights and this and that and something else. But at least be man enough to say, pal, that you put the sign up because it's about the mosque. Don't start playing games. If they feel it's at them, that's how they feel. Oh, come on, you dumbass. Now, if you got a problem and it's in the town code that what your problem is, you know, it's a problem, then the town code ought to back you up. Apparently it does. But the code doesn't say that they got to put a wall up. They've decided to plant shrubs that will block the light. It's going to take a few years. Well, all right, so that's where they're at. Now, it ain't fast enough for you. It ain't good enough for you, and that's your problem. So this is what happens, folks. You talk about the spark of something. Here's a guy. He wants something. The town code says, well, this is where it's at. So he says, well, it ain't good enough. He puts up a sign about bomb making. Now it's pissing off people next door who are in the mosque business, who are in the business of, you know, having a mosque. And they're bothered because they're being called bomb makers because they didn't do exactly what he wanted them to do. They did what the town code calls for, which is at least to try to block the light with something. And apparently, according to the city, you can put shrubs in that will grow to block the light eventually. Why didn't they put up the fence? Because they said it was too expensive. So nobody is going at anybody's speed here. He's got needs. They got needs. His are not being met. Theirs aren't being met. And this is a microcosm of the whole damn problem in this country. Everybody's right. Nobody's going to give an inch. It's the other guy. And everywhere you go, in every magazine you read, in every newspaper, in every letters section, every comment section, it ain't me, it's him. That's where we're at. We are, man. And then we talk about the government. We say the Congress can't get together. The American people can't get out of their own way. Are you kidding me? So that's the guy with the bomb making. And that's about it, man. I don't have anything else, you know.
You have another story about the police arresting the kids?
Nah, it's all boring, man. There's just nothing going on here. So that goes on the floor. And now, what were you guys going to do this weekend, man, about some more of that? We want to get some DDR going for the video?
Yeah, I was going to get a picture of what I was going to do is get some the picture there of the oil rig to figure that one out.
Well, here's what we were talking about, folks. I guess you got to be able to see on our video cast, and I was doing it in the pre-show. Let me go over to the DDR right now. Now, if you don't have the video cast, you won't be able to see, but you can listen to my description, and I think it'll help you here. Here's what I'm talking about. On one of our video clips that we show on Phil TV, it is a shot from the coast. And when you look out across the water, you see an island. One is Anacapa to the left, the other is Santa Rosa. But more importantly, dead in the middle of the picture, this little tiny speck is an oil rig. Little tiny speck, okay?
Yeah, that other one huge.
All right, hold on. Now, this was a piece of video that was shot midday, gorgeous day along the El Pacifico. And as I say, people watching the video cast see what I'm talking about. Now, let's move to dusk about a week ago. And we shot this piece of video from the second floor of our El Pacifico studios. The oil rig in question is huge.
That's weird, man.
Look at it, man. It's huge. It's like it's right off the coast. And this is a piece of video that we shot at least, 300 yards from the sand. We're on the second floor where our studios are located. It's shot across the sand, across the ocean, and right there on the horizon is this oil rig, and it's a monstrosity with all of its lights lit up. You can even see the rig. You can even see the sort of that little, whatever that thing is, cherry picker rig or the drill or something, the bit, you know?
That's weird. What causes that?
Well, I there's a lot of things that may cause it. I'm just a novice at these sorts of things, but we all know that when we see a setting sun, we see a huge setting sun, you know? So it has something to do with the light at dusk and the curvature of the earth and so on and so forth. But guys, check it out. The Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, technical direction John Ilkin. Our associate producer is Dan Northcraft, who does a bang-up job. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Visit our website, philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry.